Actually, I was going to ask you this off the thing. Have you seen Birds of Prey?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
I recommend it.
I mean, I will see it at some point. Okay. It's on my list of movies to see. I just haven't had a chance to get to the theater yet for it.
And they renamed it and everything with the Fantabulous Emancipation of Harley Quinn, and now it's Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey.
Wait, really?
I believe, yeah.
I thought it was Birds of Prey, The Fabulous Emancipation of Harley Quinn.
Fantabulous. But yeah, they I believe they've now this week cut it and they made it Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey. So, because there's been this whole like weird backlash to like, oh, this movie flopped or whatever and everything. But
I mean, it didn't make as nearly as much money as they were hoping it would.
I mean, maybe. It just feels like
definitely. Like it only made 33 million and it was supposed to track for at least 50 million. So it came in well under what they were.
That's why I'm hoping like it'll be one of those slow rising movies, because it's actually, I enjoyed it a lot. Of the DC franchises, I thought this was probably one of the stronger ones. I liked it more than Wonder Woman. I know a lot of people like Wonder Woman, but
like everything I'm seeing is still calling it the same thing. I don't know if maybe in advertising they've changed it,
or maybe
like,
that
to
was
try
like
a... and like hype up that Harley Quinn is in this to try and get. But like all the trailers and everything focused on Harley, so it wouldn't. I feel like if that audience was looking for.
Yeah, like that's why I was like, is this even so again, getting my news from Twitter, it's like people are commenting on Twitter and such, and it's like, I don't know if that's real or not, but like people are getting outraged that they renamed it. People are like saying, oh, okay, this is going to be like, this is in reaction to all like the dude bros who complained or that it flopped, and this is how they're reacting, is by trying to get more people to go see it. It's like, I don't even know half the time like what's real.
That's a good segue into the main thing. So I'm just going to go ahead and fade away into the title.
Ooh. I thought you were going to sing there. Ooh. Oh my god, he's disappearing in front of my eyes.
It's a gamer. We're here. It's a gamer.
This makes no fucking sense, but we're doing it anyway.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Make Me a Gamer, the procedurally generated podcast that's a roguelike for your ears. I'm your host, T-Man, and I'm here with...
Harvey Z, in the place to be.
So, let's see. So, before we begin, today I deleted Twitter off my phone. Last week we were supposed to record, and we didn't, because I wasn't feeling good. I didn't want to have another Sobble episode.
Yeah. It's amusing that we have this as the Sobble episode. I've gone back and listened to the Sobble episode. Yeah, it's an interesting headspace, man.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the my Sobble episode hasn't aired yet. You're talking about your Sobble episode.
Yes, yeah. Your Sobble episode may never air.
It might. We'll see. Anyway, so we just played games instead, which we will talk about.
Cool.
But I realize, like, I've been spending a little too much time on social media during the day when I'm at work, at my regular job. So I'm just, like, taking it off my phone because I have a lot easier time managing myself when I'm at home because I have other stuff to do. I have other things to focus on while at work. I just want to desperately focus on anything else. And
anything else besides work.
Yeah. And, got it. And, so, like, social media just kind of inundates you, and, like, when you're refreshing Twitter constantly and just, like, getting a ton of Iowa caucus information and, like, losing yourself into that and getting angry or, like, just all sorts of, like, it wasn't making me feel good to be on social media and to use my time like that. So I took it off my phone, and I'm talking about this because it's specifically related to the podcast. Like, we were going to record last week and then didn't because I wasn't feeling good, because I had accidentally gotten into the wrong headspace because I spent too much time Twittering and whatnot. So with that being said, let's go straight into Harvey Z Snaps, where I give you the age-old question, Facebook or Twitter?
To get rid of?
To get rid of.
This would have been easier probably years ago, but now that's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
I actually, because only since we've been doing this podcast has my Twitter really, like, I created the Twitter in response to, like,
for the podcast. Yeah. I mean, I created my Twitter originally for when I was doing Let's Play videos and to, like, advertise. And I basically only vaguely used it for, like, advertising and posting videos for like a year or two, and then I think it was sometime around, oh, I know exactly when it was that I started using Twitter more. It was when my message board NeoGAF, the one that I would always go to for gaming news and everything, imploded, and I wanted to find ways to keep up with gaming stuff, so I started following a bunch of people from there on Twitter to get and, like, keep mm-hmm. some of those connections, even though they weren't really connections. They were just, like, people I recognized from GAF. And, yeah, so, and that's when I started actually using Twitter more. And that was, like, the end of 2018, beginning of 2019, I think.
Okay. Because Facebook, we were there almost the beginning of Facebook back in the day when it was, like...
Maybe that was 2007, end of 2017. I think it was the end of 2017, because I'd already started using Twitter more before we started doing the podcast. And we started doing the podcast in 2018. So, yeah, it was end of 2017, sorry.
Got it. Like, Facebook in and of itself, we were using it back when it was, like... social networking, I guess, like what it's
supposed
to be. We
were like in the early stages of Facebook. I think my Facebook, I got it in 2004 when it was still a college only Facebook thing.
And now, like, it's so different. Like, I don't know. Do you use Facebook?
I don't use Facebook much at all anymore. Like, it's basically a way for me to plan events with my real life friends.
Yeah.
And, like, I occasionally post something. I use, like, Twitter is where my random everyday thoughts go. And, like, Facebook will be like, oh, hey, I went to a trip somewhere. Here are some pictures, you know. Mm-hmm. That's the extent of Facebook for me.
I've started to, because I was having such a negative reaction to Facebook, I made it into, like, a Zen page at this point.
I've noticed that.
Like, I don't know if you see, I don't know what it's like actually to be, like, my friend on Facebook, because all I do is post.
There's a lot of calm mental space stuff going on.
Partly because I want to keep myself Zen, partly because I'm like, oh, I like this, and it's nice to get reminded in a year or something of a quote that I like. But sometimes it's, I'm feeling really stressed out, and this is a way to kind of, like, center me, so I don't use Facebook to, like, post about, like, the newest, like, selfies that I have and such, to be stereotypical. But, like, but I will sometimes say, like, I'm at the movies or I'm doing this, but most of the time my entire feed is all, like, Zen crap.
So you go to Facebook to get Zen, and then you go to Twitter to get angry.
Twitter is where
Facebook to get back to Zen.
Yeah, Facebook, like, honestly, I'm leaning towards just, I would delete Facebook. Like, and then there's so many problems with Facebook, like, as a societal thing.
Right, yeah. Like, I feel like Facebook, Twitter is a cesspool in like, the moderation sense where, like, there people can just do whatever they want. Nazis are there. They get to say whatever they want most of the time. Some people get deplatformed, which is more than Facebook does. But, like, Facebook has all those same problems. And then on top of that is, like, gigantobillionaire and, you know, influence in elections, and, like,
that's the part that gets weird with Facebook of, like, Twitter, I can't really take it serious. I mean, Twitter has a lot of useful things on it, articles, things like that, but, like, Facebook has become, like, a political entity in and of itself,
right?
And, like, I feel it does influence elections, which is terrifying, because I don't see how we can fix that as, like, a society. Harvey Z can, though, with a snap. But yeah. Real life, yeah.
Yeah, we're not going to get into real life. We don't want to go down that rabbit hole, especially on this podcast. But in the sense of snapping Facebook versus Twitter, you're
I would Facebook? Destroy Facebook, because Twitter is still entertaining to me.
Yeah.
And it's lighthearted enough that I don't feel it's causing, like, societal destruction.
Like, for me, I feel like... I agree. I'm on board with this snap.
Okay.
For me, if I lost Facebook or if I deleted my Facebook, like, most of the people that I interact with on purpose on Facebook, I can find a way to get in touch with, like, outside of Facebook. Like, my friends, I will see them. I have their phone numbers. Even though a lot of times I use Facebook Messenger over texting, I can still text them if Facebook goes away. With Twitter, there are a lot of minor connections, especially through, like, building the podcast, building my writing, friends I have made where, like, if I lose the Twitter, I lose a way to get my name out there. Like, and that's why I had to delete Twitter off my phone, because Twitter, like, every day I fool myself because, like, I want to be a writer. I want to get this podcast out there. I want to be, you know, get my creative juices out there. And Twitter is, like, everyone says you need to have a Twitter if you want to be an author, if you want to be a, you know, you need to have your name in the.
And I remember you telling me, like, you treated Twitter for a while like it was a job.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I fooled myself and I was like, I have to keep Twitter on my phone because, like, this is important. And I finally realized, I'm like, I'm not actually doing that. Like, I mean, I am, you know, shit posting and, like, putting my name out there and having people recognize who I am when I reply to things and whatnot. But at the same time, it is causing me more stress than I need to. And if I absolutely have to, I can log into Twitter from, like, my browser on my phone and, like, post something that needs to be done, like saying a podcast episode is out or whatnot. And, but, like, deleting the app adds that extra step of I have to do extra work to do this. So I won't just, like, muscle memory be like, oh, hey, Twitter again.
And then, I don't know, do you have notifications for Twitter? Like,
no, okay. No, I have no notifications on. Like, I think the only push notifications I have on my phone are for Discord in case I, and that's only if I specifically get tagged in Discord for something. Everything else, Facebook, Twitter, whatever, like, no social media things give me notifications on my phone because I don't fucking need that.
News pop-ups?
Nope.
I don't know how to, I can't do that last step of turning off the news ones, but I have, like, way too many random ones. So I get, like, Huffington Post ones, which are, like, BS stuff. I get the actual, like, oh, something emergency important happened. But then I also get, like, the Apple News ones, which are just, like, oh, click here to find out, like, the 5 styling tips of Meghan Markle or something. And it's like, we live in a world of a lot of pop-ups, man.
Yeah, I agree. You have an iPhone, right?
I do.
Yeah. Like, I don't think Android has that internal news thing that happens with iPhone, because when I had an iPhone, I would get those articles like, I didn't ask for this.
Yeah.
What the hell? I don't want this. But I think there's Apple's, like, somewhere in there's like an automatic, like, give you the news.
There's a way to, like, turn it off, but it's a multiple step process. Yeah. So it's like, fine.
Okay. So in this new world we've created, Facebook is gone, which I feel like most people are going to be okay with. The boomers might have a problem.
That's the sad, weird thing about it.
Yeah.
It's the boomers that'll have the effects of Facebook being gone. Like,
yeah.
This was supposed to be about us. Like, again, it was for college kids to rate each other and their hotness. I'd hate to
see what happens. I mean, I know that's how it started.
Yeah.
That's how it started. It sucks, though. okay, so why don't we go ahead and move into something fun instead of pining about social media and how it's affected our lives. Instead, let's go into 15 minutes of game.
Ooh.
Remember, and, like, it's not exactly this time because we played it last week instead of recording the podcast.
We could have not said anything.
I as T-Man, the host, prefer honesty and just, like, transparency in how mental health and affects podcasting and everything like that. I don't want to be like, everything is hunky-dory.
Yeah, we're all fine.
This is part of the process. This is what you get when you're a fan of Make Me a Gamer. You get the highs and the lows.
Okay.
Yeah. you get the Grookies and you get the Sobbles.
I was about to say, if you can't love me at my Sobble, you don't deserve me at my Grookie.
So we're moving into 15 minutes of game, segment where me and Harvey talk about a game we've recently played, either together or just both played, and, like, give our thoughts. And today we are going to talk about a game that we've kind of talked about before, but I feel like you specifically haven't really had a lot of time to play in the newest version, which is Super Smash Bros. Ultimate.
The newest Smash.
The newest Smash, and the last fighter from the first Fighter Pass came out at the end of January, which was Byleth from Fire Emblem Three Houses. So there's the six original DLC characters are all in there. So you have like the first complete package. Now there's going to be another Fighter Pass with six more characters coming out over the course of the next year.
Six unique characters or like skins?
Completely new characters. We don't know who any of them are yet. They haven't revealed any of that information, but we just know there are six more coming. I bought the first one sight unseen, but I'm going to wait before I put in the money.
Were you pleased with the six that came out?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm not a huge fan of how Hero plays, which is the Dragon Quest Hero, but I like Terry. I like Byleth. I like Joker, although I haven't got a handle on how he plays really. He's a little different. Banjo-Kazooie, I like that. They're not going to be like my favorite to play as, but I like that they're in the game. It was a big request from a lot of people. And then Piranha Plant is kind of like my joke pick, kind of in the vein of like Jigglypuff and Pichu sort of, where I can play surprisingly decently with Piranha
Plant. You're actually quite good with Piranha Plant. It's not just a joke.
But like, it's one of those like, haha, you're Piranha Plant. What the fuck? Hey, stop that. No, quiet.
Like, I take Piranha Plant quite seriously when he shows up.
So tell me about, like, this was really, I think, your first time really sitting down and playing with it. We played it a little bit.
But that was early on, and it was just kind of like,
when it just recently come out.
Yeah. This time we actually sat down and, like, smashed, we used to do kind of thing. And we played in the new mode,
it's a new mode for Smash Ultimate. It's called Squad Strike. And it's a mode where it's a two-player mode, 1v1, where you get to choose either... It's 3v3 or 5v5, where you get to choose... We did 5v5. And you each choose five characters and then choose the order that they play them in. And as one dies, the next one comes in. And there's a lot of different rules you can play around with. We just did pretty much straight where one guy dies, the next one immediately comes in. But you can do like each one has two stocks. Oh. Or if every time someone dies, you go to a new stage and everything resets. Or, you know, so there's like variations you can do. We pretty much stuck to like 5v5. As one goes out, the next one comes in. Very straightforward.
I really enjoyed it. And I thought like... This was something that I was like, oh, the old Smashes should have had this, or this was something that I would want to keep playing this mode in the future.
Yeah, this was a great tournament style. Like, I could very see the generic Johnson versus you in T Man's Lounge of Luxury back in college, just like playing this 1v1 over and over again.
Like Beast Slayer matches where one person is only the various links and the other person is all the various animals or beasts.
Yeah.
Like, I could have fun with this one, especially knowing like, oh, you could play as a character potentially multiple times because my closer is always going to be my strongest, which is Sheik. Mm-hmm. But it was fun to play around with the other ones as well.
Yeah.
And like there was a chance where it didn't go to 5v5. Someone could kick the other person's ass and like, oh, they didn't get to see even the whole thing. They just left it at one person who, because they had to stay and fight. It's a survival kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. And then there was one time where we each picked each other's characters, which was fun.
I enjoyed it. Yeah. Again, like this is what Smash was in the sense of like in college and everything, where it was just fun to play over and over and over. And it didn't feel boring. It didn't feel like it got old or anything like that.
Like, yeah. We played it for like hour and a half and just like straight Smash. We started with items and then turned them off, you know, so we did there's a nice mode in the new Ultimate where like the final Smash builds when you like take damage or give damage, kind of like standard fighting games where they have their like ultimate moves or whatever, instead of the Smash Ball kind of being sort of random.
Yeah.
And I like that as well because it not only gives you a thing to like come back from if you've taken a lot of damage, but also, like, you have to use it wisely because it goes away. Mm-hmm. Like the first time you were like holding on to it and then it just disappears. So like you have to use it in with a certain time frame. But it's also not just like, oh, the Smash Ball came towards me when you were on the other side of the map. Haha, mm-hmm. I get this super powerful move.
And it was something where when I if I kept playing it, like in the end, when we started smashing in college, like eventually we discovered like the final destination stage where it's just flat. And then it became like really intense games where there was no variables. There was no items. There's nothing. It's just a flat stage. And we just fought. Like, I could see that happening here.
Fox only, Final Destination, no items.
Like, we both pick the same characters or so, and you have to go through. Like, yeah. I could see us getting really technical with the if there's extra rules and stuff to play with.
Yeah. We could definitely have some fun with it. It'd be nice to get the old crew back together, mm-hmm. have, like, a Smash night. I like the party mode Smash, but I also like the one-on-one duels, you know. I think those are more fun for people who have played Smash more.
Yeah.
You know, like the party ones, like especially with items, you know, anyone can win. And mm-hmm. that's another thing I like about Smash is it's not all skill-based.
Yeah.
But it can be skill-based if you like want to design a match around it, which mm-hmm. is also cool. Did any new characters specifically stand out to you as you were trying them out?
I really like Bleth, actually. Like
it's this Byleth.
Oh, I thought Bleth. I even said it right this time. No, it's Byleth. Fine.
Because like you're just like trying to be like Count Dragon or something. Blith, Blith.
As soon as like because that's why in the game, like the actual Three Houses one, I see it and I'm just like, it's Bleth. I'm going to change his name right then and there. No, I don't want to have the entire game. Blah, blah. Yeah. So Harvey Z was the professor.
Yeah, okay.
But I liked that character. Who else did I like? There was a few, actually. That's why there was enough new people that I was like, this is intriguing. King K. Rool, mm-hmm. not really a fan of, but I don't think I got to play with him really that. He died very quickly in the gauntlet. Ganondorf, so they changed up moves. So this is the thing, playing it now for a while, I actually got to see like, oh, some moves have actually been tweaked from old games and such. Ganondorf's ultimate, it's a lot better, I feel, than mm-hmm. the boar that ran across. Even though it's similar, the aesthetics and the look of it feel new.
Yeah.
The ice climbers are still a favorite. Oh, like all my favorites I really enjoyed, but there were plenty of new people where I was like, oh, if you said you can't be somebody that you used to play as, like your old five, I could probably find five new characters that I would really enjoy.
Cool. Did you like, Isabel, like Fishing Rod, or were you just kind of having fun with her?
So she's somebody where I would have fun with it because it's weird and wacky. But the Fishing Rod can be good if you get good with it, mm-hmm. I feel.
Kept forgetting to reel it in.
Yeah.
You would just like throw it out and you're like, oh, God.
And then the rocket planting. But I really enjoy that type of thing. Like having something like a trap somewhere on the map. In a multiplayer, I think I would have a lot of fun where I would put a rocket somewhere and then run away. And then two other people will fight there and then I'll blow it up and hit them with a sneak attack kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like she has potential. It's just weird. Yeah, like she would be someone I would secretly like practice as, I think.
Cool.
Daisy was even someone. You liked
Daisy too, right?
I was surprised. I liked Daisy, which I thought she would just be like Peach, but
I mean, she's very similar to Peach, but like, you know, slightly tweaks, kind of like how Martha and Lucina are slightly different and that sort of thing. Did I do an all Fire Emblem one? I think I did.
Did you? I didn't notice if you did.
I thought I might have at one point. Oh, I was going to, but then you picked all your best characters. So I flipped out and picked my best characters. Mm-hmm. Although I guess I could have. I could have thrown you a bone. But
no, I had to earn each of my victories. Like there was no like easy victory.
Well, there was one victory where I tried to go for the sleep with Jigglypuff and just completely whiffed and fell off the map, which, you know, run that risk.
Everybody stupids at some point.
But it was really fun getting to play Smash again. Like it reminded me a lot of college and like I like playing Smash, like the single player mode is fine. It's like good for like a little bit. It's not something I can play for hours, but like if I want to play for like 15 minutes or whatever.
Do you play it online?
Occasionally, not regularly. I played the Wii U version online a lot, and that's basically how I got good with Bowser Jr. Uh-huh. But this version I haven't played online as much. I don't know why. It could partly be because I feel like I've hit my skill cap in terms of how good I'm going to personally get at the game. And I feel like online is just going to frustrate me. I'm either going to fight people that I can beat, or they're going to be people who are way better than me, and I'm just going to look like a fool. And either way, I'm not going to get the fun matches that I'm looking for, which is like more stuff when I play with you, because there's like a personal element to it. So like, I would play online with friends, but just like online stranger matches, like I got Overwatch for that. Like, I get my frustration in multiplayer out of that. I don't need multiple things where I get like that sort of skill based, like trying to make myself better. Like, Smash for me has always been more of like a group community fun thing. And so like, while I did play the Wii U version a lot just to try and get better at the game, I think I've hit the point where like, I know, like, all right, these are like the kind of combos I can do if I'm trying for it. And this is what to look for to dodge. And, you know, I've gotten that sort of technical knowledge about doing a whole bunch of 1v1s, no items, you know, whatever. And now it's just my mechanical skill, which I've hit my peak at. Let's face it. 18-year-olds are the ones who run the gaming, like, They're the magic fingers. They're the ones that have like the best and like
reflexes.
Like my reflexes are only going downhill from here. Like, I'm in like the high gold, low plat range for tank play in Overwatch, and I can probably, like, if I really tried hard and played seriously Overwatch and just like trained at it, I could probably establish myself as a really solid platinum tier tank player. Right now I'm like wavering back and forth between gold and platinum because I play like 5 matches every season, so like every 3 months. But like all the real reflexive people are all up in master and grandmaster and, you know, have much better records than I do and play 20 hours a day, you know, whatever. Anyway, point is, I am never going to be high skill mechanical skill level just because I've never had those reflexes in games.
Do you think with esports, we're going to see players in their 30s and 40s? Or,
I mean, I think the oldest player in Overwatch League right now is like 30. Let me look up.
Good. Like, yes, they could retire early and everything, but who's going to be the old man of the game?
Yeah, like coaches in Overwatch are in their 20s and 30s. Like, so Cool Matt, who is a player for the Houston Outlaws, is like 29, close to 30. And I know Jae Hong, who is like the Korean superstar, who is currently playing, not superstar, but like he's one of the most well-known players. He's like 27, I think. And they're on the high end.
Okay.
So, like, but then again, like, this is, we're talking like Overwatch League, Call of Sports.
I like it.
The Call of Esports. Call of Duty, those sorts of things require real fast reflexes. I know absolutely nothing about MOBAs, so I don't know if like League of Legends or Dota, the way they play allows for like, you still need to, I feel like you need to micromanage more, but that might not be like the immediate, like quick reflexes a way a Twitch shooter does. Same thing for like Hearthstone. Like, people can play Hearthstone or like these card based games. And I don't think there's an age limit as to like, people play Magic tournaments well into their,
you know, like chess, you get these old grandmasters.
Yeah. Like, the strategy wise, those people are probably going to play, but like, just like any physical sport, it is a lot easier for younger people to have, like, Fortnite. Like, I think a 13-year-old won a Fortnite tournament, you know, like one of the biggest Fortnite tournaments there was. So like, you know, there's like 12-year-olds schooling people in Fortnite and that sort of thing. So I don't know. Well, it'll, as much as I love gaming, like there is a significant gap in my skill cap at my age, even though I've been playing games since I was like six. Mm-hmm. Like you can put a game in front of me and I can reasonably play pretty much anything. I may not, and I'm never going to be a high skilled person, but I can figure out how to play pretty much any game.
Mm-hmm.
But play any game well, that's a completely different story. And it's why I've kind of leaned more towards turn-based tactical type things like Slay the Spire, XCOM, mm-hmm. those sorts of games. I still like right now I'm playing through King of Cards, which is the latest Shovel Knight expansion, and that's a platformer that requires some like reflexes, but like I've always liked those games more than Twitch shooters and things like that. So I don't know, we'll see. We'll get to esports in a minute. That's the next thing I'm going to talk about, because this past weekend was the first weekend of Overwatch League. And so I want to go over that a little bit. But first, we have the Countdown Cauldron.
The Countdown Cauldron, is that what it's called now?
I mean, we've been calling it that for the last two episodes. You coined the term, I think.
It's been a while.
Yeah, okay, it has been a while. So last time we did the Countdown Cauldron, we were in the 90s. Now, it is getting towards the end of February by the time this episode comes out. So do you want to go ahead and skip into the 80s?
Certainly.
All right. Give me a number between 81 and 90, because that's the next 10.
Let's go to number 88.
All right. So number 88 on my top 100. Oh, I guess I should clarify. Yeah.
What is this?
The Countdown Cauldron is where I have ranked the top 100 games of the last decade, 2010 to 2019. I've ranked them from 1 to 100, put them in order, and then Harvey Z is picking numbers out of a hat, / cauldron, / the notepad file I have uploaded on my computer, and we're just going to be going down the list and picking out a couple games to talk about from the last decade. And so that is number 88. And we will be talking about Tomb Raider.
Tomb Raider 1?
Tomb Raider, the reboot that came out in, I believe, 2015?
Bow and Arrow Tomb Raider?
Bow and Arrow Tomb Raider.
Ah, you liked it. Well, it's 88th on your list, so it's made the top 100.
Yeah, it made the top 100. Spoilers, the other two will not make it. Ooh. I'm seeing the film that came out in 2018. Where is the actual game? I want to say it was 2013.
Okay.
So Tomb Raider 2013 was the reboot of the franchise, where they took the character and instead of making the Tomb Raider game about raiding tombs, they made it an Uncharted adventure game, basically. Tombs, there were like three tombs in the entire game that were optional for like special like treasures or something. Like they weren't actually important to the game at all. The story starts with Lara getting shipwrecked on an island. She starts fighting people that are there for some reason, and there's like supernatural shit going on, and it's basically Uncharted sort of action where there's like a lot of dramatic climaxes and like God, I'm missing the word, but you have a bow and arrow like you said, and there's like crafting and like sort of like stealth hiding where you can like shoot guys from stealth and be quiet and like try to eliminate all the enemies in the area. Then you move forward and there's set piece, that's the word I'm looking for, lots of set piece action where like buildings are falling and like, or you're like float sliding down a river. It's not perfect in any way. There was a lot of controversy leading up to it because one of the directors of the game, or I don't know if it was a director, but somebody associated with the director gave the famous quote that a lot of people use nowadays, which is you're going to want to protect her.
Ooh, I can see that being
it was loaded, and the guy, everyone was like, can't she just be badass, like this isn't like a thing. And So there was a lot of weird stuff about it. Like, people were upset because it was rebooted into action, and there were like solving puzzles in tombs was kind of like what the game was about to begin with. Mm-hmm. Obviously, some people were upset because her boobs were smaller. Like, you know, the general gaming controversies with a game. There was also something I personally didn't like, is that like there were a lot of instant death animations that were kind of torture porn-esque. You know, like, she'd like fall on a spike and it like go through her jaw, and you'd like see her like squirming for a little bit before the thing goes to black. You know, there was a lot of unnecessary violence. It felt more out of like a horror game than like a pulp adventure, which is what they were trying. Like, they were clearly trying to emulate Uncharted with this. Like, there's no question about it.
Uncharted have that sort of stuff?
No, it doesn't. Like, when I say emulate, I mean like the overall game, but like the tone of these specific like gruesome ass deaths, like, was just out of like Dead Space, you know, or Resident Evil, some like horror game where you're expecting like a guy's head to be ripped off, but like now you're seeing like her like impaled on a spike and like gurgling and like twitching. Like, you don't want to see that. You don't. It didn't fit the tone of the rest of the game, but overall, I played it through from start to finish. I enjoyed it. I even messed around in the multiplayer mode a little bit. It was fun. Like, it's a good game. The sequels really did not... Like, I didn't even play Shadow. I tried to play Rise, and I got, like, a couple hours into it, and I just wasn't feeling it for whatever reason.
Plot-wise or mechanics, or...?
A little bit plot-wise, a little bit, like... Tomb Raider was kind of supposed to be like the origin story of Laura. And like, after each game, Ubisoft was like, oh, no, it wasn't Ubisoft. It's Square Enix is publishing it. And the people who are making it are like, all right, so this is her origin. And next game, she's going to be the Tomb Raider, you know. And then the next game, it's another origin part. But this time, she's going to be like the puzzle solving badass that you know. And like, halfway, I don't even, a third of the way through Rise of the Tomb Raider, like, I wasn't feeling the story. It wasn't bad. It was a lot, I think it was just more of the same from Tomb Raider. Mm-hmm. And I had had enough of Tomb Raider when I played it. And so, and then Shadow of the Tomb Raider, by all accounts, was even worse than the other two. So, but 88 Tomb Raider, obviously it's good enough to make the list.
Okay.
Let's see, time-wise. I have no idea why I looked at that clock. That doesn't help me at all.
40.
You know what? Let's real quick do another one.
Okay.
Might as well.
I was going to save this one because at some point I knew, but my favorite. Let's do 85.
85. Okay. So 85 is... You Don't Know Jack. Specifically, the 2011 version.
Okay, I was about to say, I think I've played this game, but you mentioned the first. Is this, have I played the first You Don't Know Jack?
So, this version of You Don't Know Jack came out on Xbox 360. We used, like, buzzers to play it.
Oh.
You might have played, like, a couple rounds with us. This is not a version that came with Jackbox.
Okay.
This was not one of the phone ones where you can.
Then I don't think I might have played this one.
On Xbox 360, I would play this. We used the buzzers that came with, like, I believe Seen It was another game that had like a buzzer and then like four buttons on the controller. So you'd like hit the buzzer to buzz in to answer the question and then answer it with one of the four buttons. So there were four of them, and like, you could play it with up to four people.
This was the 85th game on your list?
Yeah. No, okay. I love You Don't Know Jack. And this one was like, I feel like one of the best versions of the game, like, even in all the Jackbox ones, because Jackbox started to really trend towards Twitch and online streaming as it progressed. And this version was definitely more for local play and like sitting around with your buddies doing a fun trivia game. And this one just had some amazing moments. It was very funny, like most of the You Don't Know Jack games are. It had, God, what is it? It's like phrase of the week. It's going to bother me until I look it up. So give me just a second here. Wrong Answer of the Week, I believe is what it was called. Wrong Answer of the Game, excuse me, found it. Each round game that you played was like a set of 10 questions plus the Jack attack at the end. And it was sponsored by a made-up company. And each game, that sponsor played into one of the 10 questions and was a wrong answer of the game. And so if you picked the wrong answer of the game when it came up, you got double the money that you would normally get if you had answered the question correctly.
Okay.
And so like it added an extra bonus because like people were like would get like so excited that they got the answer right, and then someone else had gotten the wrong answer right, and they reveal that and they get twice as much money as everyone else. And like, oh, I forgot about looking for it. It added this extra layer, and they didn't repeat that in later editions. Like, I like this specific
mechanic
to it. And then there was one of the funniest moments in gaming that actually it absolutely makes no sense whatsoever. But each round, there's 10 rounds, and obviously each round it has like a little animation that has to do with the number. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's like, I think six is a robot. Six is a robot.
Yeah, six they is had a those robot. In the,
yeah. Yeah. They do that in all the versions. And so it just like halfway through the game, like if you're playing the episodes in order, I don't remember what the four animation normally is, but just in the middle of the four animation, there's like a drive-by and the F gets shot. Or the four gets shot. I don't remember. But like whatever, I think it was just like the number four and O-U-R was like how it was normally presented. And like the number four gets shot. Uh-huh. And then like the next game, then if when you play the next episode, there's like the OU and R are like standing around the dead body of the four and are like crying. And then the next one, there's like a funeral with like, they're like holding umbrellas and like, there's like rain coming down. And then for the next couple episodes, it's just OUR and there's just complete silence. And like, the animation doesn't, it was just such a hysterical running gag to me. Like, I still remember that over like, all sorts of other random shit that's happened in games. Like that stuck with me. It was hilarious. Eventually like the F replaces the four. So it's like the regular animation returns, but it's F O U R instead of the number four O U R. But again, that's just one of my favorite like random shit in games. Like that's the kind of humor this game had. And it's just a good trivia game overall. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that game is, that's why this game is on the list. You Don't Know Jack, 2011 edition. I have to specifically say that year because there's so many versions of You Don't Know Jack. But, yeah, there you go. All right, so we have now hit two of the 80s. Because we have moved on from the 90s, I might be putting the first 10 all together up on my blog. So look out for that shortly after this comes out, hopefully. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about Overwatch League, but first I wanted to dip into the question bucket.
Ooh.
Because our friend who is currently nameless, or is he going by Ultra Bob now?
I think he needed like an ego boost. I think
he's no longer over. He is Ultra.
Yeah.
But he's not even sure if he wants to keep the Bob. I don't know.
He needs to keep the Bob.
Yeah, like if you go into the Discord, you can find whoever he's going by right now and ask him what the hell is going on. By the way, join our Discord. But yeah, like apparently he doesn't want to be associated with Overwatch or something.
Like it was a weird, like, yeah, I don't know. So I assumed that he meant like he doesn't
want to. Getting your own segment on your name. Is this what you wanted?
Like, oh, man. Like, I assumed he didn't want to be associated with Overwatch because of Bob.
Yeah, there is a Bob character in Overwatch.
And so not over the Bob, over...
God. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course, Over Bob is a direct reference to our YouTube channel, which, like, it's like an inside joke of an inside joke at this point. So, I don't know. Anyway, the person, the artist formerly known as Over Bob, did send us an email. He attached his question to a much longer thing that I honestly think he should put out as a blog post, but it's not my decision.
Okay.
But he talked a little bit about Outer Wilds and Prey, two games that he was playing. And specifically, he talked about how the space station in Prey is one of the most interesting places in games that he's ever played in. Like, he really enjoys exploring it and how everything interacts together. But the question he asks is, what are your favorite video game places and spaces? Off the top of my head, mine are the Talos 1 space station in Prey, the Black Mesa research facility from Half-Life 1, and the spooky old mansion from the 1997 game Realms of the Haunting.
I don't know the Realms of the Haunting.
I have no idea what that game is either. But
it's going to be a hard question.
Yeah, he sent that question to me. I don't have, like, I've been trying to think of something, like, off the top of my head, and, like,
nothing... Like, I can think of, like, locations that I found, like, memorable, or, like, ones that stand out to me, but, like, it's difficult to say, like, a home base type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that.
Well, so, like, for the record, like, the ones he's describing, like, Talos 1 Space Station is, like, basically the entire world of Prey. So, like, it's not just, like, a specific singular... It could be, if that's what you're thinking of, but his... Like, he specifically was, when he was talking about it, he was talking about how, like, this entire place feels like a thing that exists, you know? So, like, you're not in a area designed for gameplay. Like, this is, like, a space station. It feels like people were here. Like, everything is interconnected in a way that you can explore it.
Okay, so not just, like... my favorite map or something from Final Fantasy Tactics.
Right, exactly. Okay. I assume, and I apologize if I'm assuming wrong here, but that is, I feel like that is more the gist of the question.
Okay, then.
But obviously also if you just have like a place that you enjoy just aesthetically or in general, like that's fine too.
I can think of three different answers then to this.
Go ahead. I'm hoping maybe something you say sparks my knowledge.
So world-wise... like terrain and all of that stuff. I think, I mean, hands down for me, it's going to be like the Toe Jam and Earl original game. Mm-hmm. The way that like these islands in space were kind of floating around and such. I really love that aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one of my very memorable ones. The next one though, is if I went smaller and I went to a map, Final Fantasy Tactics has one map that I just love. I don't know if you would guess it off the top because there's so many and that I just loved fighting on it. The waterfall map, Odelia Falls.
Oh, I think I know that.
It's the like one early in about. The first like act or so. And it's basically these two sections connected by a bridge. Wooden bridge. And I love that map for like just to fight. Like I would go across it back and forth for random encounters just to fight on that map. Mm-hmm. Just so I could have like... fighting on that little like wooden bridge and stuff. It just captured my imagination. You could climb to the top of the waterfall and snipe down, or you could get knocked down. Like I could make stories about that map in random encounters that I just loved playing that one.
Mm-hmm.
Probably my overall, there was a couple in Tactics that I really enjoyed. That was one. And then if I'm thinking about spaces, so the original XCOM, the old like 1995 one, the pixel one, the way that you could create your base, I loved when you had to defend your base because then it felt like a lived in space where all my dudes were hanging out. In the first couple times I played, I didn't realize like you should sell off your old crap to like actually make your dudes ready. Because what it did is when the map started, the first 50 items in your inventory is what's loaded on the map.
Uh-huh.
And if you kept crap or if you bought like 50 rifles and then like 10 ammunition, you suddenly had like a ton of useless crap. And so the first time this ever happened, it was wonderful to have like, because your soldiers start out in different parts of the map itself. So like they're isolated. Some people are near where the aliens are. Some dudes off in like the kitchen by himself, armed with nothing but empty blaster rifles and no ammunition. And if you didn't plan tactically, it was a fucking shit show of panic where I had like a dude with like 10 like weapon clips throwing them down the hallway because his buddies are at the back. They have all the guns, but they don't have any ammo kind of thing. So that was an amazing like sequence the first time it happened. After that, I started selling things off and being prepared for when this stuff happened. But like nothing beat that initial panic of like, oh, good, I have all these guns. Oh, shit, they don't have any ammo in them.
Okay, those are some good answers. I like those. So I feel like this is one of those questions that I'm going to have a better answer for next week because it's going to like come to me like right before I fall asleep one night, and I'm going to like sit up in bed and go, holy shit, why didn't I say that? But the first thing that immediately popped into my head is a recent game that I played, and it's surprising that it came to my head, but it's the police station from Resident Evil 2. Okay. So I recently played the remake of Resident Evil 2, having never played the original, and I liked it a lot. Mr. X terrifies the shit out of me, so like that part, like I am absolutely 100% like pooping my pants anytime he's like around. But like the way the police station is designed, like by the end of the game, like you're trekking through it multiple times to the point where like by the end of the game, when Mr. X is his biggest threat, you're like, okay, well if I go this way, then down, then up, I can avoid him, or like this way go at least to here and I can go up this ladder and then turn down. And it's such interconnected in a way where like you're also like, all right, I've boarded up these windows. I know this area is zombie free, so I can relax a bit when I'm going through here. But then I've got to go through this other area that I didn't clear out because I was low on ammo the last time I was there. And everything in the environment just works so well together where like I don't even – there was a point where – I am a habitual map checker, but like there's a point where I didn't even need to check the map because I'm like, okay, I got this. I know where everything is. Like this is the zombie hallway where I've never cleared any zombies out because I just run through it every time. And that sort of like interconnectedness of like being so intimately familiar with the same space, and yet the same space is still like bringing new things into the equation, like a zombie breaks through a window that I thought I had boarded up and like, oh shit. Or like, there's a licker here now because they move, or like, fuck, it's Mr. X. So that one came to mind immediately. Another one that came to mind that might be slightly controversial is Columbia from Bioshock Infinite. Like, I know a lot of people prefer Rapture as like, kind of like the stereotypical like Bioshocky vibe of like that I like the underwater city sort of thing, but I really loved Columbia, the how like all the skyhook things in Bioshock Infinite that you could like move around between islands. I've always been a sucker for floating cities and like floating island sort of things, and while I'm not about the racist aesthetic and like the whole you know, rah-rah America sort of thing in Colombia, like it was still, it's still a very like neat world that I like wish you could play around with a little more. Like if anything, my biggest disappointment in Bioshock Infinite is that it's only a shooter. I wish you could do more stuff in that world a little bit. But I like the way that one is set up and like all the other details. And the last one I'm going to talk about, because I guess you did three. Overbob gave three examples, or artist formerly known as Overbob gave three examples. So last one real quick here is the main area in Dark Souls. And other Dark Souls games and Bloodborne and like Sekiro and all those have kind of mimicked the same feeling of like discovering shortcuts and unlocking, like big deal about how Dark Souls design their maps is like you like everything is bent around, like you kick down a ladder and suddenly you can access an area much quicker because like that's, you know, like everything meshes together so well. And Dark Souls was really the first game that it really clicked for me. And I, when I'm talking about the first area, I specifically mean like the Undead Parish, the Undead Keep, the main Firelink Shrine connection. Like there's a point in the game where you basically at the top of Sen's Fortress, an eagle or raven or some sort of thing comes down, picks you up, and carries you to a second area. And that area is kind of interconnected on its own, but it's like separate from Undead Keep. And the Firelink Shrine is like the main area that you basically is like your hub world. And that area and its spawns, because like you can go down and into like, oh god, I can't remember what it's called, but where you fight the four kings. But then there's also the catacombs that you have to fight a bunch of skeletons through, and like you're constantly finding like, oh, this is a shortcut, oh, I can go through the Valley of the Drakes to get here. Like everything, like, you can explore in any direction as soon as you get into this area from the tutorial area. And it's basically, like, you can go to the catacombs immediately. Skeletons will kick your ass, and you can't kill them until you get a divine weapon. But you can still go there if you want to challenge yourself.
Uh-huh.
And the first time I rode the elevator down from Undead Parish and ended up back in Firelink Shrine, I was like, holy shit, I've come so far and now I can go back here anytime I want to. Like, there's a bonfire right there. Like, it's just much in the similar way of the Resident Evil 2 stuck with me. It was just like I became so intimately familiar with, okay, this is the door that I need to open. I can just run through here to get down to the swamp. And like, by the time you get the fast travel option in the game, like, you don't really need it. Like, I use it obviously for time efficiency, but like, it gets to the point where, like, yeah, I know where I can go. It's not like, obviously in Dark Souls, any enemy can kill you if you let your guard down. But yeah, so Firelink Shrine and the surrounding areas of Dark Souls is kind of one of my favorite little places that comes to mind. So there you go, Over Bob, I Ultra Bob, you know, Deluxe Bob. I don't know. To end the segment or end the podcast, I will talk a little bit about Overwatch League. I don't want to go too much into detail about it because I know not everyone cares about it the way I do, but I feel like I would be remiss in not talking about opening weekend. So real quick, I assume you didn't watch any.
I did not.
Okay. Well, the Ultra Bob did happen to chill with me for a little bit in our Discord. We watched a little bit of the first game together and he had some questions. So that was nice. Mm-hmm. And again, I will try to be hanging around when I am watching Overwatch League stuff in the Discord. But so this week we had some interesting matchups. It was surprising because some teams did a lot better than people thought they were going to. Some teams did exactly as bad as people thought they were going to do. My team, the Gladiators, only played once, and they lost to the Titans 3-2.
Okay. Titans are a strong team from last
Titans
year.
Are the strong team, and they really took them to map 5. So that was, I'm proud of them. Like, the Gladiators are looking good, especially because, like, they have basically a brand new team. Only their support line is the same. It was interesting to see all these teams with, like, completely new rosters. The Valiant played twice, have a completely new roster. They won their first game against the Fuel, but then lost to the Titans. They got swept 3-0. San Francisco Shock played the Fuel, reigning champions, came in strong. They won 3-1, but it was their first map loss since the playoffs. So, like they took a map from them. It ended their winning streak. everyone expected the Fuel to be bad. Everyone expected the Valiant to be bad, and everyone expected Boston and London to be bad, based on off-season moves. Like, London got rid of their entire team, Valiant got rid of their entire team, bunch of rookies on both sides, unproven talent. Paris, people were expecting to be bad, but they didn't do too as bad as people were expecting. Boston did not great. Boston is highly thought of as probably going to be the worst team this year.
What's their name, or do you know?
The Boston Uprising.
Oh.
They are owned by the same guy that owns the Patriots, aka one Mr. Robert Kraft.
Yeah.
So I am not a fan of Boston. They're probably the team I root against the most. So I'm perfectly fine with them sucking.
Did the Justice play?
Justice did not play this weekend. It's one of the big things about the homestands is that, because there's a lot of travel involved, they're trying not to stress the teams too much. So there will likely be weeks where you don't see every team play. Currently, like right now, we got 2 homestands the inaugural week because it was in New York and Dallas. But weeks 2, 3, and 4 all had 1 homestand in the US and 1 homestand in China.
Uh-huh.
And so weeks 2, 3, and 4 right now, the China matches are just off the schedule.
Yeah.
Like, they got canceled. There's rumors that they're going to try and play them online somehow, but they also don't, that's not confirmed in any way.
So it's affecting the season, actually, if it's multiple matches.
Yeah, like right now on the schedule, if you look through weeks 2, 3, and 4, there are no Pacific Division games at all. Only the Atlantic teams are playing, which is got to be weird. Like, I'm wondering how long they're going to fix it. Like, week 5, they're playing in Seoul. So there's definitely going, like, week 5, they're playing in Seoul. Week 6, they're back in China. So who knows if they're going to, like, but, like, for the next 3 weeks, they've, you know, kind of canceled games completely. The radio silence has been kind of weird because, like, it's literally half the league is just not playing. Like, at least this next week, like, we don't know if maybe they'll figure out a way by week 3, but I don't know. So currently, there hasn't been a lot of surprises, but only, like, there were only 8 matches this week. So, like, 4 each day. I think we max out at 6 or maybe 8 matches a day in a homestand. Like, I think they're doing 3 and a couple have 4 in one day in, like, a couple places. But in general, it's going to be 2 to 3 games a day in each homestand. And so, like, 4 to 6 matches total a day, depending on everything. And, so that's your Overwatch League update. Completely stat based. I know it's probably boring to a lot of people.
I was going to ask you actually a different question then from the last weekend.
Yeah.
Did you watch any XFL?
No, I did not.
So I've been just keeping track of like how the DC team is, the DC Defenders. We won our first game. We're 1-0.
Oh, wow. So we have a football team now.
We have a football team. Our first score was scored by the defense for the Defenders. Then our special teams scored as well, as did then finally as well our offense.
So did you actually watch the games or did you
mostly
just
on Twitter? I've been following it through that and like GIFs and like highlights and stuff like that. Yeah. So I don't know off the top of my head. So there's 8 teams in the whole like XFL, and 2 games were played Saturday, 2 games were played Sunday. Now here's the difficult thing in that I don't know if it was a success, but like it seemed on Twitter, people were very excited about the XFL, but I don't know if it's just the people. So I follow a large majority of wrestling Twitter.
So obviously they're going to be excited. They're going to be,
but also the non-WWE wrestling Twitter that I follow was also like, oh, this is pretty good too. People seem to really like some things where they were like, oh, the NFL should consider this. I don't know all the point scoring. Like they were saying things like a 17 point deficit is just a 2-score game somehow.
So the way that it works in the XFL, I've read up a little bit. I wanted to know like what the differences were. And instead of doing field or like extra points, you can go for, after you score a touchdown, you can go for 1 point, 2 point, or 3 points.
Oh.
And I think it's, if you go for 1 point, you start at the 2-yard line. If you go for 2 points, you start from the 5-yard line. And if you go for 3 points, you start at the 10-yard line. And like you have one play to get it into the end zone.
Uh-huh.
So like obviously a 1-pointer is easier, but like nothing is guaranteed, quote unquote, like an extra point is in football. Apparently no one went for a 3-point conversion in the opening weekend. That was some stat that they mentioned like as a thing that was disappointing, but
and I know what seemed to be people really enjoyed were the kickoffs of all things. They felt that the kickoffs were more exciting but also safer, and that the NFL should explore it as well. I believe for the kickoffs, the two teams stand like next to each other. There isn't this running start by one team.
Oh.
So because of that, like it gives the receiver a greater chance to like run it back, but there's also less collision impact because they're not like a bunch of dudes who are immediately going to slam into him.
I kind of want to see this in action now. I want to like, at least like look it up.
They were saying it's exciting, but it protects the players as well. And the NFL like should consider or may look at that based on just like how when the first XFL came out, like it was mostly production stuff that the That's the other thing that people.
That's the only thing I remember from
her. Like this time around, so the production stuff that they're doing that's unique this time, crowd sounds are being pumped in of like where after a play and stuff, they just cut to you hear like the stadium roars and such. So there's a lot more of that. And there's a lot more of. So immediately after like a play happens, they interview the main guy on the field. So there were times where like.
Yeah, I heard about that, actually.
The kicker, like, fucked up, and they're like, so you just cost your team potentially the game. How do you feel, buddy? And stick a mic right in his face. Or,
That definitely seems a lot more WWE, where they're kind of like, so after that play, yeah.
Like, I could see it, there was, like, NFL's players who were like, oh, man, that's tough. Because, like, it started making stars, in a way. Because, like, defenders who could talk shit, suddenly on the mic would just be talking shit.
Cutting a promo in the middle of.
And if you could cut a promo, suddenly like your team was more popular. You got more views and stuff on Twitter. Like it was interesting how it's creating stars in that way. But like actual professional NFL players were like, I wouldn't want to do that. But man, this is awesome to watch that guy get interviewed after he fucked up. I wouldn't want to be interviewed. So I'm curious to see because they're viewing it as like, oh, this was a positive first showing. It was exciting enough. The scores were like well balanced. One away team, I think, won. Everyone else, it was the home teams that won. I can't think of who they were. The Houston Roughnecks won. DC Defenders.
Won. I think New York Seattle won, right? They were the away team that won.
We faced Seattle, I think. Oh, okay. So we beat them. The Seattle Dragons, I think. Oh, the the shittiest, not the shittiest, but the worst team who barely scored at all, I think, was the Vipers. Who played, I think, against the Roughnecks or... I think
Tampa Bay. Is that one of...
Was Tampa Bay Vipers, I think. And then there was a New York team that won. LA team,
right?
Oh, yeah. Who was the LA team? There's like two Texas teams, I think, and an LA team, I think.
And Dallas and Houston, maybe?
Houston Roughnecks were the one good team. But there's another team that was just like an offensive powerhouse.
I don't know. Well,
that's why I'm curious. Like, so it's apparently like 10 games or 12 game seasons or such. So
okay, well,
but it's only eight teams. So
yeah, eight teams. So they'll probably play everyone once, and then maybe like playoffs. Everyone in the division twice. If they're 10 games, like
well, they said like there's 11 more games to the season or something like that.
So like let's see. So if there's eight teams, there's three in each. So like you play if there's two divisions of eight in eight teams, you play everyone in your division twice. That's six games. Then everyone from the other division wants, that's 10 games. So if there's 11 games, I don't know. Yeah. The math doesn't quite work.
And because they were also like, their overtime rules are also something weird.
Maybe the 12 games includes the playoffs.
That's what I was thinking.
So like if you play everyone in your division twice, and then four people make the playoffs, then it's, that actually works. That tracks. So maybe.
So like 11 and 12 would be playoff and finals.
And finals. Yeah. Yeah.
Especially if there's only four teams.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Cool. All right.
Well, I'm hoping it succeeds, actually. Just in a weird, morbid way. Shake
things up a little bit.
And like DC seems to have a successful team.
Yeah. Why not? I'd love to go to a DC football game where I wasn't disappointed or accidentally racist. Or actually, I guess on this point, it's on purpose racist.
The Defenders, though, the new football team.
Yeah, let's go. We're pro Defenders. We're anti Dan Snyder. Anyway, so you'll get your weekly Overwatch League updates from me, and you'll get your weekly XFL updates from Harvey.
Sure.
Yeah,
I'll keep trying to remember these things.
This has been the sports section of
sports ball.
It's not just sports ball though. It's esports.
Esports ball.
Esports and I've got the E. You've got the ball.
The Z is silent.
All right. So that'll do it for us. This has been a fun episode. I like the way this turned out way more than what might have happened if I'd sobbled it.
Okay. We grookied it.
Yeah, we grookied it tonight. God, this is such a weird. It's a weird thing that's happened, but you know what? This is what you get when you make a podcast. You have these inside jokes that nobody cares about except for the two people making it. Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode. Harvey Z, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter at TheZIsSilent.
You can find me on Twitter at TeamManPlaysGames. Don't expect to see me there during the day, though, because it's not on my phone. You can find our podcast at Make Me a Podcast. You can always email us, like the artist formerly known as Overbob did at makemeagamerpodcast@gmail.com. And you can find my writings where I will be posting the 100 to 91 in my top 10 list at tmanwrites.com. That is it, I think. Oh, you can find our Discord in the description down below in the podcast information. I need to work on that one. I've got the rhythm down for everything else, but the Discord is new. All right. That'll do it for us. Thanks for listening. Harvey Z, take us out.
So we have our now new quote here. If you can't handle us at our sabo, you don't deserve our grookey. Who's the third motherfucker?
Score Bunny?
Fuck Score Bunny.
Yeah, I don't think we need a Score Bunny. We've got the quote. So is that? Do you think that's our sign off?
If you can't
if you can't handle us at our sabo,
do we need to say that every episode?
Well, I mean, we've been talking about building an outro, right? We need like a sign off phrase. Like, I don't feel like that's a good sign off.
No, phrase, it's though. Like it's a little bit like, damn it, I'm good enough. Like,
yeah,
people like us.
Yeah,
maybe they'll listen to us.
Yeah, no, we shouldn't end on no. that. We've got to do something empowering to end it.
It's not going to be this week, folks. So goodbye.
Yeah, don't expect anything else.